here and welcome to the Pack Heavy podcast. Now, this podcast is for anyone who works in the hospitality and food manufacturing industries who use flexible packaging to get their products to market. Featuring interviews with guests who have traveled the path that you're on so that you can learn from their successes and failures and engage in the mindset required to go all in on your vision. I call this mindset the Pack Heavy mentality, and it's primarily driven by deliberate action and extreme organization. You gather market intelligence, put a strong plan in place, organize the appropriate resources, and then confidently test your hypothesis against reality. So if you're ready to pack heavy on your vision, you're in the right place, and I'm excited to have you here. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 17 of the Pack Heavy podcast. I'm your host, Hayden Thompson, and today I'm honored to have Keith Ipple, co-founder and CEO of Spring Activator, joining us on the show. Keith co-founded Spring Activator to focus on early stage entrepreneurs with high growth potential who want to make the world a better place. He is passionate about helping entrepreneurs change the world by connecting their ideas with the right tools, resources, technology, and funding. Keith is a strategic advisor to an incredible array of incubators, accelerators, and startup companies, a sought-after keynote speaker, and a part-time instructor at BCIT in the Values-Based Entrepreneurship course in the Management of Sustainable Business program. Welcome to the show, Keith.
Thanks for having me, Hayden. It's fantastic to be here.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot about you. Your name was mentioned during the Neil Thompson podcast from Laidback Snacks, and he spoke so highly of you. So I decided to reach out and see if you and I could have a conversation, and here we are. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Neil is doing incredible work with Laidback Snacks, and he's very kind in saying those things, but such a fantastic example of somebody who is an entrepreneur and is also on this journey of trying to make the world a better place himself. And so, you know, great story to be told there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was having a look on your Spring Activator website, and you've got an incredible amount of stats there. Like, you've helped over 500 companies get started, and, you know, you would have seen the whole sort of, what would you call it? Like, the whole range of different types of businesses and different types of people and personalities come through that door. You just mentioned Neil as being a great entrepreneur. What is it that you sort of see in somebody, you know, that gives you an indication that they're going to be a great entrepreneur?
Well, that's such a fantastic question. And I feel like if I had the ideal answer, I would probably be a billionaire being able to pick them all, you know, but there definitely are some things that I think stand out. So one is people who move, you know, they have hustle. They don't, when they know a decision, when they have a decision, when they have an opportunity, they go.
Yeah.
They have, I would say, an above average amount of humility. They know that they don't have all the answers. They know they can't do it themselves, but they couple that with being fearless to ask questions. Right. And I think that's actually a really important hallmark of a good entrepreneur is just, you know, if you can't get an answer to a question in 15 minutes or less, then, you know, start to ask around. Because there's probably anywhere from 6 to 16 entrepreneurs who have had that exact same question before you, and somebody's done it before. And so I think having that inquisitiveness, I think, is really important. Adaptability, you know, when things aren't working, not to necessarily keep pushing that, but to find another way around the problem. So important when you get into things like marketing, sales, pricing, right? Like those types of scenarios. I would say it's definitely true. I would say as well, trying to wrap amazing people around you, right? The classic cliche, you know, always hire people who are smarter than you. And so I think that that's another key hallmark for entrepreneurs. Those would be a couple of things that I really love to see. One other thing that I would say is probably somebody who looks to revenue early as they can, to really validate that there's something real there, that there's a there, as we like to say. That would be something that I would also look for. And I think if you're looking for some of those characteristics, you're probably finding great entrepreneurs. And Neil is a great example. Naked Snacks, Brian Miller with Not a Grocery would be another really good example of this. And Sarah Goodman with Chiwis, which is a healthy kiwi chip company.
Yeah, I had her on the podcast a while ago.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah,
so
it's awesome.
So these are people who have pivoted, adapted, you know, really listened to the customer, sought out the revenue. Like, I think those are great examples of people who have so much upside potential.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there are some scary stats out there, and I wrote them down because I wanted to put them past you to sort of see what you thought. But of the 500 companies created, I know, and you would probably agree, there are a huge percentage of businesses and startup businesses that fail, you know, and there are some stats out there that like 21.5% fail in the first year, 30% in the second year, 50% in the fifth year, and then over 70% of startups fail within a 10-year period. So of the 30% remaining in that 10 year, I mean, you just identified some characteristics of an entrepreneur that would sort of, you would like to think would be sitting in that, you know, remaining 30%. Of the 500 that have come through your door over a 7-year period, what percentage have sort of been considered successes and what percentage would be considered failures, even though failure can be seen as a good thing in the startup world?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you say that because, you know, in our particular case, you know, the last stat that I saw, I think, is over the 7 years that we've been running, about 70% of the entrepreneurs have come through are still active.
That's right?
They're still.
Yeah,
it is. It does, though, come to the second part of your question, which is what defines success and what defines failure. And I do think that in the entrepreneurial journey, it is really important to embrace failure as. And I mean, we need to come up with a different word, you know, like, because failure has a certain connotation. Yeah. If your idea is no good, or if nobody's going to pay for it, you know, you have to shut it down. I think there's a big difference between failure and shutdown.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean? It's feedback, isn't it? You know,
it really is.
Failure is feedback.
Yeah, and there's a fantastic entrepreneur that we have in our network. Her name is Elaine. And, you know, when Elaine first came into our incubator program, she had a very specific idea and she went through the validation process. And at the end of the process, the feedback from the market was emphatic. No, like nobody wanted it. Nobody liked the idea. And so she was like, great, shut down the idea. She went on to her next idea, went through the same process, also shut down. The third idea took off in a huge way.
Yeah.
But it was because she could release, right? It's like shut down and release, shut down and release. And so I think we really have to redefine what it means to shut down and not use that word failure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think for me, to be honest, failure is something very different. Failure is when you have an idea that the market is clearly telling you you should stop, but you can make just enough money to survive. And then you do it for 30 years. And to be perfectly honest, I'm probably describing 70 to 80% of all businesses in Canada and the world, people who just skip off the top of bankruptcy for until they retire. And that's, to me, that's failure, you know, because you have so much talent and so much capability. The market really doesn't want what you're looking for. Shut it down and go find something that really will happen, you know, for you and for the customer and to obviously for us, you know, to change the world, right? Like, let's go do that. So
that's cool. You just mentioned Elaine and, you know, it was the third idea that really took off. For those first ideas where she was getting customer feedback and, you know, product validation to see if there was a market fit and the answer came back with an overwhelming no, what kind of tests was she putting out there? How did she go about her research to sort of arrive at that? No.
Well, I think, yeah, that's a great question. And I would say that there's probably a couple of ways to view that validation. So the first one, of course, is to meet with potential customers or users, depending on what it is that you're trying to do. And so in that process, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to find out if people actually have the problem that you think they have. And then ultimately how your solution resonates with them. And so this process is if we use the kind of the hipster term out of the tech world, it's called customer discovery.
Yeah.
And customer discovery, though, is just a fancy way to say structured interviews, ideally with 35 or more people. I say 35 because that is statistical significance.
Right.
If you're doing consumer-based products, you're really trying to do 75 or more. If you're business to business, 30-35 is definitely, you know, kind of a great starting point. So first thing is you're doing these interviews. First, you really want to hone in on what is the problem and who exactly has that problem, who exactly is that target audience. And then from there, testing the solution. The fun part is there's lots of cool ways to do this testing. So for example, doing the interviews as I described. Second, you can set up Facebook groups, Facebook pages. If you look at Not a Grocery in Vancouver, one of the first things they did was they created what we call an unbranded Facebook group, which is called Zero Waste Vancouver. So it generally designed to be a like for the movement of zero waste, which now has over 12,000 members in it. But they use that movement group as a way to get feedback and kind of ideas and also build community. Crowdfunding campaigns are a fantastic way for business to consumer product-based companies. And so that's another fantastic way to do it. Getting people to sign up to email newsletters, getting people to sign up to wait lists are all ways to test ideas. And the goal is to try different ways to get to as many conversations as you can to know as much as you possibly can pre-launch, right? Mm-hmm. Save time, save money, right? And that's the reason why we do it.
I love hearing that. I completed my master's in entrepreneurship and innovation a few years back. I completed in 2015 at Swinburne University in Melbourne. And amazing. We were working from Steve Blank's book, The Startup Owner's Manual. Have you come across that one? Yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic. Steve Blank is one of the real thought leaders, but in a very pragmatic way for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And so that book is one great example of that.
Yeah. And I loved hearing everything that you were just talking about, because that is everything that Steve talks about. And it's one thing to go to university, and I see you have done your MBA, and I'd love to hear about that. But then it's another thing to get out there and get in front of your audience and, you know, get out of the office and actually speak to people and to hear you say that that is the real world process. It was really nice to hear that. You have completed your MBA.
Correct.
And that was quite some time ago. What value did you find in that? Was that something that you felt that you needed to have? And in hindsight, would you do it again?
Well, reminding me it was quite some time ago means you owe me a beer for calling me old, but that's neither here nor there. I'm just kidding. You know, and it is interesting, right? Because when somebody goes through an MBA, I think an MBA can be invaluable for a couple of reasons as a potential entrepreneur. One is if you do not have prior formal business training, like if either you did not go to university or college, or you went for another degree in say engineering or the arts or in some other topic area or subject area, an MBA is a really fantastic way to build a set of tools. But the reason I like it as an entrepreneur is because they tend to be strategic tools. So you're not just kind of caught up in the weeds of the day to day, but it helps you to kind of consistently take a step back, see the forest for the trees, and not just for the business as a whole, but in areas like marketing and sales and finance and leadership. So I love that. And you mentioned one of the universities in the world that also has a very strong entrepreneurial focus. Other schools would include the Hayes Gain School at University of Calgary, IE University in Madrid, Cal Berkeley down in California in Oakland. These are examples of schools that excel at preparing people through an MBA program to be outstanding entrepreneurs. And so I think there's a lot of power in that. And I think the important part for anybody here is to think about two things. One is no one source of education will be the complete source. Mm-hmm. So whether you take an online course or you go to MBA school or anything in between, you know, no one tool will solve all of it. The goal is to continue to kind of round out and have that breadth and depth of kind of knowledge. And the second one, of course, is continuous learning. And if there's one thing that COVID taught us is that, you know, we as entrepreneurs need to be constantly learning, right? Mm-hmm. And we've all watched people adapt to, you know, online sales and marketing, mm-hmm. you know, last mile distribution, you know, that's such a great example. The one thing about MBA schools that really holds you relative to say like online training is an MBA school brings the network. Right, the fellow alum and the people who are supporters of those MBA programs, though, that's the door openers, right? Like, and that's just such a powerful tool for entrepreneurs down the road, is to be able to pick up the phone and call people and say, hey, fellow alum, would love to ask you a question. Can you help me out here? Can you make an intro? Like, there's just a lot of power there.
Yeah, I agree. Having started Spring Activator or co-founded Spring Activator, you must have seen a need in the marketplace for such an organization. And one of the great things on, you know, I've been perusing your website, is that you do offer some form of continual education and community as well. Can you speak a little bit to that?
So one trend that has been
really driving since about 2010 has been this, let's call it alt school education, right? So this is everything from become a developer in, you know, 10 to 12 weeks, and Lighthouse Labs in Canada and General Assembly in the US are two fantastic examples of that. And I think incubation acceleration is another place, like getting some of these really kind of specialist, very time sensitive trainings and support. I think when looking at incubation acceleration, what we do at Spring is really about wrapping the mentor network, the investor network, that kind of real time subject matter expertise, I think is kind of the critical component. And then you did touch on community. And so I'll give you a real life example. We're running the Business Resilience Program right now. We launched it in early May of 2020 in response to the crisis. And that is really designed to do a couple of things. One is give people that access to real-time education training tools, especially as they're trying to adapt to like online sales and marketing, as we talked about earlier. But the other piece is people need to be able to pick up the phone and talk to somebody. So, you know, group sessions like group Q&A, lunch and learns, the ability to access one-on-one experts, and giving people that ongoing community of support is so, so critical. And so that's something we really believe at Spring. We do that community on multiple levels, right? So newsletters, we have an online community platform, we have an online learning platform. You know, really recognizing that people will ask for different types of help in different ways at different times, and having that set up for success. So, yeah.
That's cool. I mentioned it on my last podcast episode with Curtis Wong from Small Business BC, but it's a reoccurring theme on this podcast that everybody that I speak to talks about the importance of building their network out, leveraging mentors, and also, yeah, working within a community to sort of expand your, like I just mentioned, your network, but also your understanding of what it is exactly that you're doing and where you could potentially be falling short. I'm just going to run a scenario past you. So I'm a food manufacturing startup working out of a commissary kitchen, and I'm looking to grow and build a network around me. So sort of just what we touched on, but where do I start?
So you have struck a very personal chord for me, because in the last 2 years in particular, we at Spring have been doing more and more work with food entrepreneurs globally, in Canada as well. And of course, with COVID, there's been such a dramatic shift in that marketplace. And so knowing that that is true, I think for me, there's a few things that I would say. You first need to recognize that as a food entrepreneur, that there are certain parts of your business that are very trade specific, rules and regulations, laws, packaging, labeling, distribution. And so there's no hacking that. You know, you need to plug into programs and support specifically for that. The benefit for food entrepreneurs is that tends to be community centric, but also regional and sometimes national. So I always say, look for all of the organizations and associations around, say, for example, being a food processor or packaged food company, CPG, et cetera. That's kind of point number one. Second, get your digital marketing hat on as fast as you possibly can, because you're looking to navigate a very different world right now in terms of how you go to market. And for every individual, say CPG or packaged food company to have their like own e-commerce website and like get profitable doing that is super tough. So you need to be looking at like, what are the different channels? How do I get the word out? How do I drive this process? I think is really important from my perspective. And so there, that's where you're looking to peers. Look to your fellow food entrepreneurs and talk to them. What have they done? What has worked? What hasn't worked? How much do they spend on Facebook ads? Why? What did they change? So I think building that peer community is really critical. The benefit is that there are many peer communities that are, again, local as well as, say, a provincial, state, or national. And I think that that is a key place to go. Lots of fantastic Facebook groups and other sort of associated groups, but getting the word out is super, super important. And then the other thing that I would say is get into revenue as fast as you possibly can. Because you're going to want to drive your early growth through revenue as opposed to trying to look for investors. Early stage food is challenging to get, you know, investors on board. It's super risky. Then what they ask for in return for that risk can be very expensive. And so that's a critical piece. So what I would say is, as a third action item, go to those non-dilutive sources of funding, loans, grant opportunities. Crowdfunding is really powerful. So I think one is get the dedicated training and support related to the specific rules, regs, packaging, pricing, like the trade pieces. Second one is build your network around the go-to-market, sales, marketing, digital marketing, ad spend, et cetera. And then the third one is look to those alt sources of financing, grants, loans, crowdfunding, in addition to revenue.
So when you mentioned that it was expensive, do you mean that you may have to give a large chunk of equity away in terms of expense? What do you mean there?
Yeah, thank you. So point number one, you are correct, is that often you might end up giving a much bigger piece of the company than you would like to, or really you want to. In addition to that, it's not uncommon for investors at an early stage of a food business to also use loan vehicles or a hybrid kind of like a loan that could convert into equity. And then you look into things like interest rates and terms, like as in length, you know, term length and some other challenges that can really take a bite out of the company early. And so that's the kind of specific focus that I'm on there.
Cool. I did notice that you had an investment readiness training and impact investment challenge or investor challenge program at Spring. I think it could be a good little segue into that. So tell us a little bit about what that program offers.
Yeah, thank you for asking. This is one of the most exciting things that we personally, and myself and Spring, have experienced in the last 12 months is the incredible rise of impact investing in Canada and around the world. And so the Impact Investor Challenge is designed to do a couple of things. One is it is designed to help a group of people get educated, empowered, and put into community to make their first early stage impact investment. And so it's a 10-week program where they get educated on all aspects of impact investing, and it culminates in them writing a check. So cumulative is $100,000 or more in investment for that organization. In addition to that, the entrepreneurs, and so we start off with a group of 20 entrepreneurs, are people trying to make the world a better place, and they're looking at capital as a way to accelerate their growth. And so a couple things worth noting: we get a diverse group of entrepreneurs across a variety of sectors and industries. I would say about 20% of the entrepreneurs historically have been food-based entrepreneurs. The investment can also take a variety of forms. So it can be straight equity, it could be straight loan, it could be some form of like loan that converts into equity. So there's a few ways to do it. One of the finalists that we had last year was Ecologist, which is an impact fashion and clothing company out of Victoria, BC. And their funding round was actually linked to an equity crowdfunding platform. So that's actually how they could, you know, made the vehicle happen. We have a minimum of $100,000 gets invested. Typically 3 out of 5 finalists will take investment from the cohort. And it's a fantastic opportunity to do that. So really designed to empower entrepreneurs and investors both in this world of impact. We've had a couple of very successful food companies come through, including Not a Grocery, This Fish, which is a seafood traceability company. Most recently, MCOW Foods, which is a farm to roasting to chocolate bar company. So it's a impact chocolate firm doing incredible work. And those would just be a couple of examples that I can think of.
Perfect.
I'm going to ask you one quick question.
Yep.
My daughter is practicing her flute. Do you want me to tell her to pause for a few minutes?
If you don't mind. That'd be great. Okay. Thank you.
Give me 2 seconds.
Of course.
Hayden?
Yep.
My daughter has a flute lesson in 1 minute.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll just let everybody know that they're being serenaded in the background.
No worries. That's part and parcel of just the life today. It's totally fine.
Amazing.
Yeah, not a problem. Awesome. I would love to know, so you've mentioned the word impact a few times. Can you just define impact and sort of speak a little bit towards what impact means to you and the way that it applies to the world at Spring?
The term impact is a very interesting term because for all of us who want to make the world a better place, which I would argue is probably about 98% of humanity, right? Mm. You know, every time I give a talk, I always say, hey, show of hands, how many people want to make the world a better place?
Yeah.
Oh, 98% of people raise their hands. And so I always say, congratulations, you're an impact entrepreneur. And so while people sometimes will use a different set of words, phrases to describe it, fundamentally, I think impact means to intentionally be trying to make the world a better place every day in what you do and or how you do it.
Got you.
And so the what you do is the external facing, the customer facing, mm-hmm. or for the investor, you know, kind of like entrepreneur facing. And then the how is in how you do it day to day. So internal, everything from hiring practices to giving back in the community to you know, making sure you have proper governance and everything in between. So so I think for me, that's kind of like where I go on impact.
Right.
And what I would say is that impact is a journey. Mm-hmm. I find that people continue to evolve their definition of impact for themselves, or what we would call our impact thesis, right? Like, so what is it that I'm trying to do and why, and to what extent? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an important journey. The way that we view it at Spring, as well as for myself, is that we like to triangulate against a couple of things. The first is the UN Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs. Those give us great thematic areas upon which we can describe where we want to create impact, right? So is it in gender equality? Is it in healthy oceans? Is it in vibrant, livable cities? Is it in, food for all, education and giving access to education, right? So across all of those goals, you can pick the ones that are important to you thematically. From there, what we like to do is we like to look at the B Lab B Corp process, which includes what's called a B Corp assessment.
Yep.
It's kind of the, you know, Better Business Bureau seal of impact, if you will.
Yeah, I'm familiar with B Corp. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're certified B Corp. And the reason that we're certified B Corp is because it challenged us to think more deliberately about how we're creating impact in how we run our business. Mm. So think about UNSDGs as like externally facing thematic, B Corp as a little bit more internally facing and how you do your business. Fantastic. And then what we do is we then wrap around impact measurement. And so for us, one of the places that we tend to go is the Global Impact Investing Network, or GIN for short, has something called Iris Plus. And that is a framework where you can actually pull specific impact measurement tools out to apply either to your own business or, in the case of an investor, into the businesses that you're recruiting. And so I feel it's very important that as I'm talking about impact measurement, that my daughter's flute is giving us this up. Like uplifting. Right. Like perfect timing.
Yeah.
So
watch out. Awesome. Hey, listen, I just want to circle back to the conversation that we were having on investment. So investment readiness, I like the way that that sounds, because essentially it tells me that you're working with businesses to prepare them to adjust their business so that their business is ready to take on investment. So, you know, an investor, when they're looking at the business, there are certain KPIs or certain qualities within that business that strike a chord within them that go, this is something that I'm looking for, certain ratios. What is it in particular that somebody should be thinking about when they're preparing their business for investment? Where should they focus? You were suggesting, you know, obviously getting to revenue as quickly as possible in early days. But if you're a small to medium-sized business and you've been in operation for, you know, 5 or 6 years and you're at a certain growth stage and you need a capital investment, what are people looking for to come on board?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. And one of the first things that we try and do with investment readiness training for entrepreneurs is help them to understand if they should even be asking for investor capital. Mm-hmm. Not every company profiles as investor ready. Yeah. Might be loan ready, crowdfunding ready, grant ready, but maybe not investors. So that's kind of point number one. Within the bounds of this, we start off with goals and objectives. So where are you trying to take this company? How big do you want to make it? By when? And then there's an important term that many of us have heard, but for everybody, exit strategy. Mm-hmm. So in other words, when do you want to get out of this business? And it is important to note that that answer could be, I'm doing it to retirement. I'm going to run it for 15 years. I want to sell it in 2 years or less. Like, there's a big spectrum on what exit means to an entrepreneur, but you need to know that because that will impact how you approach the investor community. Hmm. So when we say, what is our vision? How big can this thing grow? And what is my exit, mm-hmm. target exit? Those are kind of the really essential starting points. Mm-hmm. Then the next step is to actually say, why do I want to raise? So in other words, if I asked Hayden, if I asked you for $100,000, your first question is going to be, what are you going to do with the money?
What do you need it for?
What do you need it for? And one thing that I will say to everybody on this call is, if you tell an entrepreneur that you need the money because you're not making money and you need to cover costs, the answer is no every time, mm-hmm. right? So the goal here is to say to people, I'm asking you for investment because with your investment, I will be able to create a lift. I will be able to create strategic growth, right? I can accelerate the process. And so what you want to do is make sure that when you're speaking with investors, you're speaking in a future-facing lens, not a here today, cover my overhead lens. Nobody wants to hear that. That's what a bank is for, right? Yep. And so I think that's the next thing. The next topic is to focus on what you need beyond the check. So in other words, I'm looking for people with industry experience to help me better understand how to win in this industry. I'm looking for people who understand my business model, say e-commerce or wholesale retail or software as a service. I'm looking for people who understand that so they can help me get from A to B faster. I'm looking for people of network of other investors, of partners and customers, and of talent, right? I'm looking for people who understand the geography I'm in and where I'm expanding to. So that's the next question in the process. And then we get into, you know, the fun stuff, like how much exactly do I want to raise, by when, and then, you know, some of the risks and opportunities in the business, et cetera. Those would be kind of the next steps after that. Mm. But I think it's really important. You have to say to yourself, why am I doing this in the first place? You know, why do I need angel investors? What can they, you know, what am I looking for beyond the check? Mm-hmm. And the reason is because I'm selling you a piece of ownership in my business. You and I are getting wed, you know, business-wise, mm-hmm. until we sell it, we retire, something. Like, this is not an inconsequential ask.
Yeah.
And so we want to see if we can get something beyond the check. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why we run the Impact Investor Challenge, is because entrepreneurs going in know that at a minimum, people are values aligned. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the sectors that they're in because they're impact entrepreneurs, impact investors. And they also are really focusing in on those things that are important to them in terms of their own expertise. And so thus the alignment. Mm. So the way I like to summarize that, every entrepreneur has a target audience, mm-hmm. right? So like I say to a lot of entrepreneurs, like, my mom is 80 years old, lives in a small town in Southern Ontario, is retired. And so the chance of her being your target customer is probably pretty remote.
Yeah.
So you would never call her. You would never waste your time.
Yeah.
But there's a funny thing that happens with entrepreneurs is when they go to raise capital, they'll pitch anyone who looks wealthy. Mm-hmm. And the quintessential phrase is, you never know. Mm. And so part of the reason we do this, you know, prep as an entrepreneur, and one of the reasons why we do investment readiness, is to break the mold of you never know, because that term is death to an entrepreneur when you're raising capital, because you can just expend mountains of energy and time for no purpose, because people, they don't invest in your sector, they don't invest in your space, they don't care about impact, they can't add any value beyond the check, right? Like, so that's one of the key points of that.
That's awesome. What other areas do you focus on at Spring? I mean, we've mentioned a couple. What other, whether it was being, you know, the community, whether it is, you know, the business support program, we've just touched on investment readiness. and the Impact Investor Challenge. What other areas should people know about for spring?
Over the last 2 years, I did mention the food a little bit. So we are very active in the food community right now. Mm-hmm. And so that's packaged food and food processing, food manufacturing, food retail, e-com, a little bit of agri-tech would kind of sweep into that. We're active in those communities in incubation, so idea to launch, as well as acceleration, so launch to early growth. And we also have an active program right now, which is an accelerator program for new immigrants to Canada. Hmm. And it's a program that we're very proud of. At Spring, we're the only impact immigrant program in Canada that we're aware of. And so that's also fantastic. And then the third key piece is that investment readiness training and support for entrepreneurs. Mm. And then the other big piece is the investor training through the Impact Investor Challenge, investor summits, so the events for impact investors, and then the kind of deal flow mediation on that side. Mm. And bringing those impact entrepreneurs and the impact investors together. So that's really the key places that we do it. We do it at a community level. So for example, active right now in places like Whitehorse, Yukon, Calgary, Vancouver, Toronto, where else are we? Sarajevo, a couple of spots in Southeast Asia, Lima, mm-hmm. Peru. So, you know, we do it kind of like globally, but in individual communities and then kind of nationally as well.
Mm, that's awesome. It's pretty obvious to me that you must be very good at identifying and simplifying and understanding somebody's vision and then helping them to sort of discover and realize their business goals and dreams. It must be a superpower of yours. Where do you think that comes from? Is that something that's inherent in your nature, or is that something that you've sort of been drawn to?
Such a good question. It's both, and I'll explain. Inherently, I'm not an idea guy. Mm. Like, you know, every so often I'll come up with my own idea, but what I'm actually, yeah, one of my personal superpowers is just to hear what people are saying and then repeat it back in plain English so that everybody mm-hmm. understands it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of core. But the other piece too, to be fair, is, you know, at Spring, you know, I probably run, like, myself personally, at least 300 workshops. I've probably worked with a couple thousand entrepreneurs. You know, pattern recognition over time.
Yeah.
Right. And yep. so it's not rocket science. It's just experience and a little bit of wisdom. You know, as I like to say, I've earned my lack of hair. And so it's a great way to kind of describe it, you know?
Yep. What was your first business?
As an entrepreneur, my first business was a company in the data visualization space. And to be fair, I did not found it or co-found it. It was actually founded by an incredible entrepreneur. And then I actually came in and took over as CEO. And that was back in the kind of early to mid 2000s. And so that was an amazing journey. It was high tech, you know, 48 or 49 patent applications, 22 granted by the time we were done.
Yeah.
Also have been involved in digital media, social media companies. Also was involved in the launch of what we call a venture builder, which is an organization that either builds companies from scratch from their own ideas or helps other people, including individuals and corporations, to do it.
Yep.
And then Spring. So Spring's my fourth. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, you had just mentioned patent recognition and you are you've been working in the entrepreneurship space for so long, and some people are drawn to entrepreneurship because they love a little bit of uncertainty and that excitement. And then other people are real sort of comfort based and, you know, they want to work within an organization that's established. You're obviously the kind of person that loves that level of uncertainty around you and maybe a level of exploration and seeking the unknown. Is that something you believe to be true?
Yeah, I think everybody is different, right? Like Brian Miller, who I mentioned earlier, Brian Miller is a marine biologist by trade.
Yeah.
And she, like, the best way to describe it is she backed into entrepreneurship. She saw plastic in the ocean. Mm. She knew it was a problem. She looked for the way that she could create the maximum impact. And she found that it was in entrepreneurship. And so she kind of backed into that process. But you know, she wouldn't have traditionally have called herself an entrepreneur prior to that. In my case, you're absolutely right. I love getting things off the ground. I love the challenge of launching things. I love the challenge of trying to find ways to make things work. That is definitely my sweetheart spot. I love talking to customers.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how if you, the more you let people talk, the more you really understand their hopes and fears and dreams, what they really need, what they don't really need, what they'll actually pay for is fair exchange of value. And so for me, I'm just really passionate about doing that. And so that kind of best describes who I am. But you know, sometimes you meet entrepreneurs and you're like, wow, you are an entrepreneur. I get that. And other people, you're like, wow, I didn't expect this, you know? Funny. And so how people manifest in it is really powerful. But I would say that's also why you're building a team. Like you need people around you who have complementary and different skills and experience to allow the best of you to take flight, but then also to mitigate the risks and weaknesses of who we are.
I think there'd be a lot of people out in the world that consider you a mentor or, you know, that lean on you. Do you have a mentor or do you work with people and a network around you to lean on?
So the short answer is yes. And the long answer is no. And it's kind of a funny way to say it. The reason I say that is because yes, I do have people that I do lean on. There's some incredible people. If there's one thing I have learned as an entrepreneur, you just need to pick up the phone, right? Like people are willing to help at all times. What I would say, and the long answer no, is because in my world, we support others all the time. So to be perfectly honest, I'm just really hopelessly out of practice because I spend so much time offering help that it's hard for me sometimes just to do that like mindset shift and be like, and now I'll ask for help.
And so,
I think it, for me, it's interesting, right? One of the benefits of me working with a lot of entrepreneurs is when I say out loud about being fearless to ask for help is it's almost like me verbalizing on a daily basis what I need to remind myself to do because I'm constantly giving. You know, sometimes it's important to remember to receive as well. So, and then a good mentor, you know, somebody that you can trust, they trust you, that you like each other, that you can see how they can have a direct impact on where you are today and in the next 2 years. Like that's really the sweet spot horizon in a relationship. And then I always encourage people, you know, 2 to 3 people at a minimum. So you have diversity of opinion. 6 is the absolute max, right? After that, it's just noise, right? Like if you have 10 or 12 advisors, like really it's just noise at that point.
Yeah.
So hone in, I think 3 to 6 is kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah. Perfect. You know, when I was reading about you on LinkedIn and obviously jumped on Google and I did some reading about you too, you're an extremely busy person and you've got your finger on the pulse in so many different areas, you know, obviously being a strategic advisor to, you know, incubators and accelerators and working at Spring. And I was looking back through your history and of your resume and you've got a career that spans over 27 years, starting as a business analyst for Hyundai, which I thought was really interesting as now, how do you keep it together? How do you keep your finger on the pulse and how do you structure your week?
So how do I keep my finger on the pulse? I try and have like at least 4 conversations a day with people who are external to my team.
Right.
You know, that's where you find the pattern recognition for sure. The second thing is I actually make sure that I am either teaching or actively advising at least sometimes on a periodic basis, because that also really helps me to stay, you know, fingers on the pulse. And so when I look at my days, like one thing I will say is, you know, my calendar is probably more structured now than it's ever been in my life.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, when I look at it Sunday night for the week, it's a little bit scary how structured it is, but it actually has created a lot of freedom, you know, blocking out times like time blocking for customer calls, time blocking for the team, time blocking for, you know, email and Slack, time blocking for social, like really has allowed me to make best use of my time. And I think that's a constant learning exercise, but I think time blocking has been a huge release for me, especially since COVID. Right. When it's so easy to roll out of bed and onto your laptop. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Perfect. I do have one more question if that's okay, because I know Absolutely. That we're running close to the hour. If there was one key piece of advice that you can impart onto every entrepreneur or business owner that's deep in the trenches right now, what would it be?
Well, can I do two?
Yeah, of course. You can make it three if you like.
Yeah, fantastic. The first one is you have to stack, key piece of advice right now is you have to stack priorities. And the stack priorities from my perspective is your physical well-being.
Yeah.
Second is your relational well-being. So unless your physical well-being is in place, it's very hard to be fully present for relational well-being. Mm-hmm. Then focus on your business, mm-hmm. right? And what I would say is when you focus on your business, focus on your team first, second, and third, then the customer. Like your team is supposed to do the work, right? Even if your team is three or 300, I don't care what the size is, right? And so I think for me, that's like one core piece of advice. And then the second thing that I would say, especially in 2021, is, you know, you have a plan. What you should be doing is revisiting your plan every month. Rapid changes, rapid shifting in the marketplaces right now, and do get help, right? My encouragement to everybody is you should be sending out at a minimum one email a day. Like that should be the goal. One email a day asking for help, whether it's an introduction or you're looking for, a customer introduction, or you're looking for access to capital or access to talent. Like, I don't care what it is, like get into that habit. Because I think we're still in a place right now where we have no idea where this COVID thing is going. Like, I think I used to travel at least a week a month pre-COVID. I got back into Canada 12 hours before it locked down. And a year ago, actually today. You'd have to think it's going to be at least a year before meaningfully people can even start to travel again. And so you've got all things like Zoom burnout and, you know, completely different ways of doing business and a lot of evolution changing, a lot of new opportunities that are coming up, which is completely amazing. So do those monthly reviews.
In what form would that review consist of? Would it be like writing down or reviewing your business plan, or how do you sort of see that?
So in the perfect world, you set out a set of goals. Now, when I say goals, people on this call may hear goals, you may hear business plan, you may hear OKRs, objectives and key results. You may also hear the metronome framework. So there's lots of good frameworks out there and you want to pick one that works for you. But what you should be doing is, you know, celebrate the big wins over the last month. Second, look at your metrics and KPIs. Like, what are the numbers telling you? Third is lesson learned from the last month. Fourth, looking ahead, what's coming up? What are the roadblocks, next steps, and go.
Awesome.
And you want to do that with the team. You can't do it solo. And you got to get everybody bought in and on board with what it is that you're doing. And so, especially in times like these.
Yeah, it's tough. Awesome. Listen, mate, thank you so very much for everything. I've learned a ton today, and I'm sure the listeners have as well. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Super easy. Keith@spring.is is my email. An even better way is to connect up with me in LinkedIn.
Yeah.
For everybody, there's only two Keith Ipples in the world, which make it super easy. And the second one is my dad. He's a wonderful guy. If you want to connect up with an 81-year-old retired man in Ontario, please do so. But I am the one in Vancouver. So connect up with me in LinkedIn is probably the absolute best way to connect.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time with me as well. It's been great.
You're welcome. Ciao.
Ciao.
Bye. Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions from today's episode or would like to know more about what I can do to help you achieve your packaging vision, you can reach me directly at Hayden@thepackheavypodcast.com. You could DM me on Instagram @thepackheavypodcast, or we could also connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. I'll see you next week.